From the JPR Steve Nelson Performance Studio on the campus of Southern Oregon University, welcome to another JPR Live Session where we get to better know artists we appreciate and get one-of-a-kind in-studio performances. I'm Dave Jackson. JPR Live Sessions are made possible with support from the Talent Club. Get their live music schedule at talentclublive.com. Returning to JPR is singer-songwriter Steve Pult. He's an in-demand collaborator who's co-writing credits include all kinds of folks you hear on Open Air and The Folk Show, and Billy Strings and Oliver Wood and Imogen Clark and Molly Tuttle, Jim Lauderdale. A lot of them have also been guests on JPR Live Sessions. He's been making music for decades now, going back to his band Rugburns in the early 90s, and just released a new solo album, Joyride, and he's touring and solo acoustic, and he just played in Ashland the other night, and he's on his way down the West Coast. Steve Pults, welcome back to JPR, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, but I have to correct you. You made a mistake.
Uh-oh.
And I just feel like I need to do that. This is now the Steve Pults Steve Nelson building. I don't know if you know, I had them put my name on it, too. I'm in the middle of a lot of things going on, and I just felt like I feel hurt that you didn't know that, and with what I've got going on, because I'm also bidding to buy Greenland right now, so I have my name on this building, so maybe from now on you could do it right, and show a little courtesy to your guest.
My apologies, okay. Steve. You're in the Steve Pult, Steve Nelson's Performance Studio for
Thank
today
you.
Anyway.
That feels good.
So Joyride features several songs that you wrote with Shane Nicholson, Jim Lauderdale, one with Vince Herman. Talk to us about Joyride.
Yeah, so I didn't write one with Shane Nicholson, but love him.
Yeah? Oh, I thought I saw him in the credits on there.
No, I don't
Maybe
think
that's
so.
Past stuff. Okay. Talk to us about making Joyride.
So, okay, there's this guy in Canada, and he's a really good songwriter, and his name is Joel Plaskett. And he's an East Coast staple. And I was born in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Mm. So I'm a dual citizen of Canada and the United States. Every time I go up to Canada, it's kind of cool because I show them my Canadian passport and they always go, welcome home. And then I fly back into the U.S. and I'll be connecting through Chicago or something. They're like, get in line. So, but anyways, I was making this tribute record that I had a song on for Joel Plaskett. So there was this guy, he produced my friend Elizabeth Cook's record, earlier record. And so he's a guy in East Nashville who lived right near me named Dex Green. Mm. And so my buddy Derek Hoke said, go over to Dex's and record the Plaskett tribute song at his studio. It's really cool. So I went over, and man, I had such a good time, and it's really hard to get me into the studio. And I'd been writing songs with this guy named Andy Frasco. Mm-hmm. And so we had this song out that just came out recently.
If I can intervene, I could see you and Andy Frasco having a good time writing tunes together.
So we wrote a song, and it's me and Andy Frasco and Billy Strings and Mike Gordon from Fish and Daniel Donato, and it's called Life is Easy. So I was writing these songs with Andy Frasco, and he put that out. And then I was like, man, you reminded me I got to make a record. And I thought, well, this guy Dex was so cool to make this song for. I'll go back over there and see how it sounds to record some stuff. So I went over and I recorded this song called Hairlift, which I liked the title of, and I wrote the song around the name Hairlift. And so I just had so much fun, and I just went over every day, and next thing you know, we had this album, and it's got 10 songs, it's 32 minutes long, and there was like 7 songs left on the cutting room floor, and Dex Green was like, you can't leave this song off. And I'm brutal when it comes to, I like a record to be about 32 to 33 minutes, and just have 10 songs and be quick and painless, like a COVID shot or something.
Right.
Yeah, so that's how the record was born. And then my buddy Vince Herman came over to my house, and he's in Leftover Salmon.
Right.
And so we wrote this song called Love a Little Bigger, and then Lauderdale called me up. He was like, hey, I got an idea for a song. So he came over, and then he had to go pee, and he's like, hey, I got to take a wiki leak. And every time he goes pee, that's what he says. It's so funny. And then we wrote this song called Add It Again. Mm. And that was how. And then Gary Nicholson. Oh, that was why you thought
Shane Nicholson. And I meant Gary Nicholson.
Shane Nicholson's a good friend of mine from Australia, who I had lunch with recently at Moss Tacos in East Nashville. And I was like, but we didn't write a song. Gary Nicholson.
Right, that was my bad.
Two songs. You're brilliant. It's okay. No, you really are. Our lines of communication, and it was my fault for saying I put my name on this arts building because that was where my head was at. But right now I'm pulling a filibuster, and we will get this bill passed. You just wait. So anyways, I made the record with him, and it was a beautiful experience. Mm. And I'm so excited that I get to be in this studio with you today here in Chicago. Like, I love what you guys have done here.
Yeah. Well, how about playing us a song? What do you want to play today?
This is called Hair Lift.
Excellent.
I've been feeling so scarred. I've been walking down the boulevard, living in a graveyard, maxing out my credit card. And I'm gonna get a hair lift, gonna try to work the day shift. Hey, I've been such a spendthrift, and I gotta buy a wedding gift. And it's hard to be so distant from you these days. I'm like a rat that's stuck inside a strange maze. And everything I love right now's gone sideways. Is this a passing phase? Watch me shoegaze. I'm gonna clip my toenails. I've been getting down to details, hanging out with all the snails, and I think I'm going off the rails. Well, I used to play ping pong with my old friend Mao Zedong. I thought he told me I was well hung, but he was speaking in the mother tongue. And it's hard to be so distant from you these days. I'm like a rat that's stuck inside a strange maze. And everything I love right now has gone sideways. Is this a passing phase? Watch me shoot. Got songs full of notebooks. I'm losing all my good looks, balancing my checkbooks. I'll never be as rich as Garth Brooks. And I'm trying to write a hit song, but I've been smoking from the big bong. Now everything comes out wrong, and this'll never be a sing-along.
Steve Poltz with Hair Lift in a JPR live session. That's from his new album, Joyride. It's just dropped. You can find it and all kinds of stuff about Steve Poltz at Poltz.com, P-O-L-T-Z.com. I wanted to say something. Shay Nicholson, I know who that is married, was married to Casey
My
Chambers.
My buddy Casey Chambers.
Right, right.
We sang a song together at Byron Bay Blues Fest.
Oh, right on. And, you know, I love her song with Shane, the divorce song that we didn't do. We didn't do so great together, but we do divorce just fine.
That's a good song.
It kind of is. It's actually a pretty decent, like, friend song. So tell us a little more about Hair Lift.
So Hair Lift, I like the idea, instead of getting a haircut, you're getting a hair lift. I thought it sounded kind of cool. And then I always wanted to talk about Mao Zedong because I grew up under ping pong diplomacy mm-hmm. with Richard Nixon. Mm-hmm. And so I went to University of San Diego, which was this Catholic university. And we were the Toreros, and my mom and dad were so happy. So I started playing in the folk mass at the church. You know, I was like a sophomore or junior, and I was in folk mass. And that's how I started the Rugburns, because uh-huh. the other dude that was in folk mass, the Rugburns started as a classical guitar duo, huh. and we would play classical guitar pieces, and then we turned into this punk rock band.
Right. Well, that's a lot different than what I've seen and heard.
And so that's what Hairlift, I just wanted to, there's just certain things I just wanted to say, and I want to see if I could make a song out of it. And I wanted the song to have no resolve and just go, this will never be a hit song, and just end. Uh-huh. And it ends the record, so it's track 10.
Right.
And it kind of leaves people going, they look, sometimes the audience looks at you like a chihuahua would look at you if you put a sweater on it at Christmas and took its picture like this. Kind of cocked your head like, that's it? And then the record's over. But
nice.
It was really fun making the record. And I'm so glad. It's so fun when you have a new record, because you go out and the records come in and you look at them and you hold them for the first time. And they're so pretty, and the artwork on it. Oh my God.
I like some Beatle-esque sort of stuff there. And
yeah, Anna Pollock is such a good artist.
Yeah.
I love art, and I like that we get to be alive at this time in the world. Yeah. The world's so cool, and there's so many neat things going on. It's awesome to go out and see people, and you meet them. Like maybe a busboy at Waffle House or something is there, and then you start getting these conversations, and maybe the server, maybe it's a lady and she's got like a silver tooth. And then you start asking about the tooth, and then what's her favorite movie? It's the best thing about being alive is talking to strangers. And I see strangers every day, and it's so fun because people's faces are like roadmaps, and you can kind of tell the life they've lived. And man, people sometimes have hard lives, but they just need, it's fun to ask them questions, because then when you leave them, they feel kind of, you can tell, They're a little happier, and I'm a little happier, because you have this exchange between people, and it's a beautiful thing. Yeah, that's why I like what I couldn't really do anything else for a living.
Yeah, right on. You have another track on Joyride. It's about a well-known celebrity who may or may not have called you on the phone selling encyclopedias.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So when I was a little kid, I was all alone in the house, and I was 6 years old. And there was a knock at the door. And I was six, and I go, hello? And so there was a salesman there, and he was beautiful. He was like 6'2", with steely blue eyes and wavy silver salt and pepper hair. And he goes to me, I've never forgotten this, he goes, hello, little boy, are your parents home? And I go, no, do you wanna come in? And he goes, all right. So he comes in the house and he goes, we should lock the door. Now, I know right now you're tightening up in your lower bikini area, but it's not going there. He was super nice. And he brought in a huge trunk. And then my uncle came out, and I was kind of raised by this gay uncle who moved down from Cape Breton. And Cape Breton was no place for a gay man to be in the early 60s. It was like Brokeback Mountain stuff. Like you'd have to keep it on the down low. So Uncle Louie moved in with us, where in the words of Joni Mitchell, he could be a free man in Paris, like the song she wrote for David Geffen.
Right.
So Uncle Louie comes out, because he's in the back room, and he's smoking a cigarette. It's 1966. And then my mom finally came out of her room, and she suffered from depression. And kind of the reason I do what I do was I was always trying to cheer her up, because she had to get shock therapy and didn't recognize me when she came back. So I would learn all these pieces on guitar to try to make her smile. And so I feel like the audience is kind of like my mom, and I'm chasing this thing that I'm never gonna get to the end of, no matter what. I can't get there. I can't fill the hole I have trying to do that, but it's fun trying to fill it. So I'm sitting there in the house, and the salesman breaks out these Funkin' Wagnalls encyclopedias. And my mom comes out of the room, and she's got a big cigarette with a long ash. And she's like, we're not buying any of those Funkin' Wagnalls encyclopedias. I don't know why I make her sound like Burgess Meredith and Rocky right now, but she's like, I'll cut you over the eye, champ. And so I said, and I stuttered, and I was like, Mom, can we please please, can we please have the encyclopedias? And she goes, I'll get them for you if you promise to read every one of them from A to Z, front to cover. And I was like, Mom, I promise I will. And then I dropped something under the table, and I remember looking under the table, and I saw the salesman's leg going up my uncle's leg, and their feet were intertwined, and they didn't know each other, and his leg was rubbing up against him, and my uncle's was rubbing his leg back. And I remember thinking at the age of 6, I should not mention this to anyone. And I've kept that secret in my head until this radio interview.
Amazing.
Where I felt like it was time to come out.
It's a debut in a GPR live session.
So I was thinking about all these things, and I was thinking about the encyclopedias, and I was wondering, where did they go? So I had this dream. I was talking to Jesus, and I was wondering about the Funk and Wagnalls encyclopedias. And I woke up and I wrote the dream down, the conversation I had. So I'm going to perform it. And this is called The Son of God. And I've been playing on the road a bit with John Prine's band. They had me learn all these John Prine songs. And they take me out and we go play these performing arts centers.
Nice.
And I got yelled at for playing this song by a woman because they also had me open the shows. And so I knew I was onto something good. Now, when you're listening to the song, just for the listeners out there, you'll know when Jesus is talking because his voice is going to be higher than mine. And that's not to cast any aspersions upon Jesus. It's just so you'll be able to tell the twixt and the tween when I'm talking and when Jesus is talking. So let's pretend we're on a Broadway show right now and it's black. It's all black. And then all of a sudden one spotlight comes on and there I am and I open the conversation. You're listening to Steve Poltz. Son of God contacted me about buying some Funk and Wagnalls encyclopedias. I said, hello, who's this? It's Jesus. Jesus who? Jesus H. Christ, God's son. How'd you get my number? I have everyone's number. Even Bono? He's on speed dial. Rad. What up, G's? We have a storage unit in heaven that we're paying rent on. And we want to downsize. Who's we? Me and Dad. God. God pays rent for a storage unit in heaven? Yeah, man, we all do. It's a lease that never ends. You think you can't take it with you? Well, I'm here to tell you that, in fact, you have to. And it gets so pricey. We still have to pay membership fees in heaven? Yeah, man. Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, and whatever other channels Taylor Sheridan has shows on. And even another Netflix account under an older email you forgot you were paying on. Well, what about hell? Everything's free in hell except for your soul. Ever since the devil went down to Georgia, things have gone sideways. Hang on, let me light my cigarette. Does your father know you smoke? Does God get a share of the profits? He gets a percentage of the storage unit fees and some Netflix, but Bezos blocked him from Amazon profits. He said he wanted his bank account to be as big as Elon's. So Dad's going broke. Lumber prices, inflation, affordability, tariffs, artificial intelligence, the cost of a dozen eggs, etc. I'm a child of God, so I guess I'll take your encyclopedias, although I don't really need them, man. All the answers are in our hands and our phones. Dude, help me out. My dad is pressuring me to sell, sell, sell. I'll change your water into wine, give you a get-into-heaven free card, keep you out of hell. Okay, thanks. I love you, Jesus. That's what they all say. Except old Beelzebub, he just plays rock and roll down below with Chuck Berry. That sounds like fun. Does hell have Taco Tuesday? Only heaven. Every single day is Taco Tuesday. Well, where will Bob Bob Dylan, and man, I'd like to go where he goes.
Let me check. He's in his 80s. Looks like his score is tied. It depends on his next record.
What? Hasn't Bob Dylan done enough, man? I'd like to go where he goes.
Not so fast, Poltsy. I know your history. You're gonna need to get into heaven free card.
Okay, thanks. And I guess I'll take all your encyclopedias. Although I don't really need them, man. You scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. Quid pro quo.
Sorry, I don't speak Latin. The Catholics outlawed it in the 60s. Here's your card, you're all set. I'll see you maybe even sooner than you think. Oh shoot, spoiler alert.
What? What do you mean you'll see me sooner than you think?
Just forget I said that.
I can't forget you said that. Can you get me a prescription for some Ambien?
You can get that at any bar in Ashland, Oregon.
Okay, thanks. I guess. I'ma going to the promised land, I'ma going to the promised land. Thank God for bribery, blackmail, the Son of God and the Lamb and Bob Dylan. If he gets into heaven, I'ma going to the promised land.
It's Steve Poltz in a JPR live session, tuned from his latest album, Joyride. That was Son of God. So one of the things I appreciate about your songwriting and your music is you can make a fun song, a humorous song like that. You could be really sarcastic and then sometimes be really poignant and heartfelt. And I see that in your performances too, a little like how Todd Snyder went about things. Was he actually a friend of yours, or did you guys know each other?
Oh, man. I was just with him about 2 weeks before Todd died. We both played the Ryman for the John Prine You Got Gold tribute show, and it was like 20 artists. Mm. It was me and Courtney Marie Andrews and all these different folks. And I was supposed to share a dressing room with Bonnie Prince Billy and John Paul White, who was in the Civil Wars. Mm. And so I get to the Ryman like 6 hours early, and I had nowhere else to go, and so I got to the Ryman, and I walk in backstage, and Todd Snyder was already there. And me and Todd go way back to when I was in the Rugburns, and he was in the Nervous Wrecks. Mm-hmm. And we used to paint each other's toenails, and wow. You know, we would go into a bar and set up a wiffle ball field and play wiffle ball. Will Kimbrough would be the pitcher, and would smash pint glasses, and fans would be waiting to get inside, and we'd be going, "We're in the 19th inning. We got to keep playing." And so with Todd, I was always like, "You can do that?" And we always had a great friendship. So I walked into the Ryman backstage, and we're going to be playing the John Prine You Got Gold thing. And Todd sees me, goes, "Steve, come up to my dressing room." And I go, "Well, I can't. I'm supposed to be sharing it with Bonnie Prince Billy and John Paul White." And Todd goes, "No, man, I'm sharing my dressing room with Evan Dando from the Lemonheads, and I've never met him. Do you know him?" And I go, "Yeah, I know Evan." And so he goes, "Come up to my dressing room and share it with me." So I go, "All right." So that, and the Ryman people are going, "You need to be in your dressing room because we run this thing like this," and they're really uptight about it. And I go up to Todd's dressing room, and he shuts the door, and Evan Dando sees me, and he goes, "Steve, how's it going? Remember in the 90s we were trying to score an 8-ball of coke outside the Casbah?" And I was like, "Oh yeah." And that was years ago, like before I got sober and everything. And then Todd had this big jar of weed on the table, and so Evan goes, "Can I have some of that weed?" And Todd goes, "Sure." And Todd had a big old spliff behind his ear, and he handed it to him and a bong. So Evan Dando was double fisting this weed, and the room was so smoky I was getting a contact high, right? And there's a bottle of John Prine whiskey, the stuff that they give to each performer, so Evan's drinking that. And then I'm just hanging out with these guys, and they're both so stunned. They're speaking gobbledygook, but I speak fluent gobbledygook, so I felt like I was understanding what they were saying. And I don't know where the time went, and then all of a sudden there was this scream in the hallway. "Where's Steve Poltz? He's on in 5 minutes. We can't find him." And Todd opens the door, and smoke's coming out like Cheech and Chong. And the guy walks in, and he starts coughing, and he sees me. "You're on in 5 minutes." And Todd Snyder goes to me, "What song are you singing?" And I go, "I can't even remember, but I think it's Illegal Smile." And Todd goes, "Perfect."
Yeah,
so
really?
Todd Snyder goes, "I'll go watch you from outside at the crowd at the Ryman." So I go down there. 3,000 people sold out, pin drop quiet. And I say to the audience, hey, my name's Steve Pultz, and I've been upstairs sharing a dressing room with Evan Dando and Todd Snyder, and I think I need to call my sponsor. Well, the audience loved that. I do my song. It goes over well. Then Todd ends the show with the Prime Band singing Lake Marie.
Wow.
It was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I gave him a kiss on the cheek at the end of the night. And he goes, hey, I'm kind of nervous. I'm going out on tour. And I gave him a kiss on the cheek, and we hugged each other, and then he passed away.
Yeah.
You know, he...
That was sad.
He ran into some crazy action in Salt Lake City and then came back and was sick. And it's really sad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he definitely left us way too soon.
That's for sure.
You guys seem to, like I say, you're both able to be humorous and sarcastic and poignant all at the same time. How do you know why that comes out of you that way?
Well, for me, I just love how goofy life is. Life is so fun. Mm. Like every day is so fun. I always wake up and I run around like right when I wake up and I'm like, the Pultzes are open for business. The Pultzes are open for business. Amen. And so I always go, this is going to be the greatest day of my life. And I believe my own BS by saying that. I've learned to train my mind. If you say it 21 days in a row, you start to believe it.
Mm.
And so I'm able to always create because no two shows are alike. So it depends. Like, you know, last night I was really into, I just learned how to play Wharf Rat by the Dead.
Right.
So I get excited. It's like I have this shiny new toy. And I was so fun. I was on stage. I was like,
I picked up on it pretty early on. I was like, that's Wharf Rat.
It's so cool, and I just feel like I'm getting away with something that I'm not supposed to because I'm a solo guy, and I'm just like,
right,
I'm old man down,
right,
way down, and it felt so good. So, getting back to your question about writing songs and finding, I find the joy in them, and then sometimes they're sad. I just don't ever like to censor myself. So I want it all to come out.
Well, that's I heard you talking with somebody else, and you brought up a term called Pultzerize that related to your writing. Define that.
So Jewel, do you know Jewel, the singer Jewel from Homer? So we go way back to the beginning of her career, and we were living in this place in La Jolla at Wind and Sea, right on the ocean, and so we went down to Mexico and we ended up writing that song, You Were Meant For Me, which was like a huge hit.
It's, right.
So we wrote that together and it becomes this, it sells like millions of copies. But when I was writing it with her, I wanted it to be from this, so to going, dreams last so long, even after you're gone. You know that part?
Right.
I know you love me and soon I know you will see. You were meant for me, and I was meant for you. And I was like, let's make it like where the guy's like hiding underneath her bed and then go into a speed moment part that goes, you were meant for me, you were meant for me, I was meant for you. Oy, oy. And she goes, we're not going to Pultzerize this song. And so she turned my last name into a way of how to destroy a song and take it on a left turn. And she said, we're not Pultzerizing this song. And I'm so glad she put a leash on me for that song because that song helped to pay some of my bills. It was like I got an endowment from the arts where they went, let's not have him sing it, have her sing it so it keeps him out of too much trouble and just trickle the money down over part of his life. And because the angels were worried about me if I got too much of it, so it all worked out.
And it was definitely a hit for her, and I guess you would help.
But there should be a speed metal version of it.
That would be interesting. So I recently also learned that you recovered from a stroke a few years back, and it happened while you were on stage?
Yeah, I was in Wilmington, Delaware, and I was playing this show at World Cafe Live.
Mm.
And I was just playing, and I was playing an old Rugburn song called Single Life. Mm. And the song starts off, and it goes, there's a cold piece of pizza in the fridge if you want it. A stale glass of beer on the table. And so it starts like that. It's got this loping beat. And then in the middle of the song, I lost my vision. And I thought they turned the lights off, but I went blind on stage.
Wow.
And then I just kept repeating, there's a cold piece of pizza. And everybody thought I was taking the piss out of the audience in an Andy Kaufman-esque way, like trying to mess with them, but I wasn't. And I'd gone blind, and I could barely see through a little keyhole in my left eye. And so finally, I was about to faint, and I asked the audience, did they turn the lights off? Can you guys see?
Wow.
And the audience was like, we can see. And then I said, I think I need to stop this show. I don't know what's wrong with me. I can't see. And then this guy comes up and he's like, sign my vinyl record. I drove all the way from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And I was like, but I can't see. And then I was rushed to the hospital. And then they said, oh, yeah, you've had a stroke. So I was in the hospital for a week. And then my vision came back, but I couldn't read. And then our letters looked weird to me, you know, like, and then it slowly came back to me. But what was weird was I got totally into the dead. It took a stroke to get me into the dead. Like, and now, like, I love the dead. Uh-huh. Like, their music makes sense to me, but it didn't make as much sense pre-stroke. Huh. And there should be, like, some scientific study done
on it.
Yeah,
I wonder if that's an endorsement or not.
Because now all I do is listen to the dead. Like, when I drive, I'm talking, like, right now I'm so into 76 Boston. Uh-huh. That version of Wharf Rat Brosif is so good. May I call you potassium bromide? I mean, like, that is so good. It's good stuff. I love it.
Right on.
Do you like the Dead?
Oh yeah, totally. That's I'm big into the Grateful Dead. So
good, isn't it?
I'm our resident Deadhead here at the
station.
Oh,
you are?
Yeah,
dude. I want to know you.
Yeah, we should hang out.
Like, I want to live with you.
Right on.
I really want to know you.
We have a spare bedroom. We could.
We do?
Yeah, we could take care of that.
But I want to sleep in your bed.
Probably not.
Okay. Can I sleep underneath it?
Oh, there we go.
Okay, good. At that point of the interview, things got awkward, and we ended it.
Yeah. So early on in your career, your first debut solo record was One Left Shoe.
Yeah.
You had an A-list band for that. How did that?
Dude, you've done your research. You're like Barbara Walters.
Oh, yeah.
One time I kissed Barbara Walters. I was on the road with Jewel, and we were doing that show. I think it was called The View. And we were singing You Remember Me. And I was backstage getting my makeup put on, and Barbara Walters was like, you're handsome. Like, she thought I looked good. And then she goes, come sit over here. And I sat on her lap, and I was like hugging her. And then I was like, I leaned down, and people left, and we kissed.
Oh, wow.
I made out with Barbara Walters.
Wow.
Rest in peace. I love her.
Yeah.
So you're like the new Barbara Walters of this station, because cool. You're asking good questions. You've done your research. So the all-star band to whom you were referring was Leland Sklar on bass. Leland Sklar, you may remember from his days with James Taylor. Mm-hmm. Long, long gray beard all the time with Phil Collins. Now, also, there was another bass player we used, Jerry Scheff. Jerry Scheff played with both Elvises. Elvis Presley, who I met when I was a little kid. Elvis held me on his shoulders.
Wow.
And Elvis Costello, who I met with Jewel when we both went to, me, Elvis, and Jewel saw Bruce Springsteen at Earl's Court in London. And it was when Elvis Costello was in his Grateful Dead phase.
Yeah.
So that band had those two, and it had Jim Keltner on drums. Fun fact, Jim Keltner's playing drums for me. Into the studio comes Don was to talk to Jim Keltner about playing on Paul Westerberg's record he was working on that he was producing. So Paul Westerberg comes in and sits next to me. Stephen Soles, who was producing the record, who was in the Alpha Band with T-Bone Burnett and was also in Bob Dylan's Rolling Thunder Review. Stephen Soles produced one of my favorite records called The Man with the Blue Postmodern Neo-Fragmented Guitar by Peter Case, another friend of mine. So me and Stephen Soles get really close. He doesn't know how into the Replacements I'm in. Two, I love the Replacements. They were like my Grateful Dead. And so Paul Westerberg sits next to me, and I'm freaking out, and there's a big sign on the wall. It says, no smoking. Paul Westerberg pulls out a cigar, those little cigarillo things, starts smoking it. He can't give two craps about what the sign says. And then he's listening to my song, Silver Lining, and he hears the guitar lick, and he goes, that's a nifty little lick. And that was all I needed to hear. And then Jim Keltner ended up playing drums on Paul Westerberg's record that Don was produced. Now, let's also not forget who else played on that record. Dean Parks played acoustic guitar. If you look at Dean Parks' credits, oh my God. And let's not forget who arranged the strings on it. The guy who did the strings on Ode to Billy Joe. What's his name? I can't remember.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, and Van Dyke Parks played accordion on that record.
Wow.
And you know his work with the Beach Boys and everything. I'll remember the guy's name who was a string arranger. And the Mighty Boss Tones were the horn section on a song, too. Oh, and David Kemper played drums on it, too, who you know from playing with Jerry Garcia and Melvin Seals and all those guys. We've really covered it all today.
Yeah, folks. We dropped to how many names?
And we did it at Oceanway Studios.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, you asked the question about those guys. They were all interconnected in some weird way. Isn't that wild?
Yeah. That's...
Like, all of them.
So how did they wind up being the band on your debut solo album? I mean, that just...
Here's how it happened. I had a huge record deal because I had that hit song with Jewel. Mm-hmm. And they thought, this kid's got something special. He's going to make it. But little did they know, they were dealing with a freaking crazy person. And so they wanted me to be real mellow, like Duncan Sheik, you know, like on stage. And they're like, why can't you be more like Duncan Sheik? And I would get on stage like, I'm going to try to not say a word and be real serious. But I couldn't do it. It was like, there was too many fun things to talk about that happened in life. And so anyways, the record doesn't sell a lot, but I got to pick my choice of producer, and they offered me all these producers, and they flew out Danny Korchmar. Now, you have no idea how much I love James Taylor, right?
Right.
I love James Taylor. They fly Danny Korchmar out for me to perhaps produce my record. Yeah. And we're at a restaurant in Los Angeles, and Danny Korchmar says to me, you know, when I produce a record, I also talk about the lyrics. And he goes, I want to talk to you about a couple of lyrics because I want you to change something. And right then, the hair on the back of my neck stood up. Like, how dare you question my lyrics? Like, because I was younger, I was younger. Now, it wouldn't matter, but at the time. And I said, well, what are you talking about? And I had this song on the record called Kicking Distance. And the gist of the song goes, I am within kicking distance of your heart. And I must find others. Because I always like that term in football. They're within kicking distance of winning the game. And I thought, oh, this would be cool. I am within kicking distance of your heart. And he goes, I love that song. I love that line. But you have a line in it that I don't like. And I go, what line is that, Danny Korchmar? May I call you Cooch, like James Taylor did? And he goes, I don't like the line where you said, what started so simple has turned into a pimple, unsightly and sore to the touch. And I thought, in my mind, I was like, how dare you question me? I'm Shakespeare. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps into this petty time. But I didn't say that to him. I just went, oh, okay. And then I ended up working with Stephen Souls, which makes me laugh because I really could have gotten to know Danny Korchmar. Mm. And now if somebody had said it to me, I go, oh, you got a problem with that line? Yeah, let's talk about it. Let's discuss this. But I was too young and dumb and idiotic, and it makes me laugh. And I hope I get to see him again because I recently ran into Joe Henry, and we played a Neil Young tribute show in British Columbia, Canada. Mm. And I got to tell him I was sorry I didn't pick him to do the record One Left Shoe because he also came for the job with T-Bone Burnett. They came together, but I ended up going with Stephen Souls because I just liked him. And plus, he was in Bob Dylan's Rolling Thunder Review, and I got to ask him all these questions about the tour. So
nice.
You know, I'm sorry I'm talking so much.
No, that's good.
Have you ever heard of meth? No. Well, thank God we're not doing it, but I did have coffee.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like, and I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
There you go.
We were watching the All-State halftime show. So, anyways.
Yeah. It's interesting you said that nowadays you would accept the criticism.
I have no problem with criticism.
I remember a story Todd Snyder told about Garth Brooks asking if he could change some lyrics to one of his songs. And Todd said, yeah, as long as you send the check the right place, you can write it anything you want.
Yes.
Put the right name on the check, send it to the right place, you do whatever you want with it.
Yeah, that's a great answer.
Yeah.
I love that answer. That's so good. I never want this interview to end. I would just like the listeners to know right now, I'm very happy in this moment.
Yeah, me too. We could sit and chat all day. Unfortunately, I'm going to have other stuff to do, and I'm sure... you're on a day off, though, aren't you?
Yeah, I have two days off. I haven't had days off in so long.
Do you want to DJ with me upstairs? I'm just kidding.
Oh, my God. That would be crazy. My sister was a DJ at KCR, San Diego State.
Uh-huh.
And she got me... I never forgot, for Christmas, I opened up this record, and there was a guy that looked like Buddy Holly, and the record was checkered, and it said, Elvis Costello, My Aim Is True. And it blew my mind.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you wrap up with one more song for us today? What do you want
to
play?
I would love to wrap up with one more song. This has been a blast. And
yeah, likewise.
The people in the studio are so cool. Everybody here at this studio, thank you.
Well, thank you.
Okay, I'm going to end on the title track, Joyride.
Excellent.
Yes, go ahead.
It's Steve Poltz in a JPR live session.
I like that. Let's do it again, but can you do it more like it's ASMR?
This is Steve Poltz in a JPR live session.
That's so good. You know what I like about ASMR is you hear their lips smack like this, so they go, I had such a tough drive today, but I just want you to know you're so special and you're loved.
Excellent. I'm feeling the love in this room right now.
Me too.
This is Steve Poltz in a JPR live session.
Heartaches and hassles and beaches and old sandcastles, missed flights and phone calls, wandering some hotel halls, rental cars, lost keys, freakouts, weak knees, bad moods and dumb fights, and bathtubs and candlelight, snow cones, dance halls, Cracker Jacks, baseball, train tracks, sunsets, sure things and bad bets, haircuts and pedal boards, and capos and no cords, and delays and car wrecks, and boring old sound checks, half price menus, haunted venues, merch sales riders, long drives, overnighters, dangerous weather, old hats with feathers, and thrift stores and airports, and bounce checks and passports, free hugs, no shrugs, wrong drugs, bed bugs, smiles, laughter, for here ever after. As long as I'm with you, there's nothing we can't do. I look for the best run, I'm here for your lifetime. It's a slow ride as we glide. It's a joy ride.
That was Steve Poltz. The tune Joy Rides, the title track to his brand new album, just dropped the other day. And since this is one of the first interviews he's going to do on this, my entire career is resting on this particular interview.
This as was is the yours. First one.
Yeah, so as is yours. Our careers are based on this.
I love that. I love JPR. Cool.
We appreciate you as well. So, Steve Poltz is on tour right now. Got some dates in California coming up. You can find information at poltz.com. And then you're going international. What's going on after that?
Okay, after that, I'm finishing up. I got 2 nights at the Belly up in San Diego. And then 2 days later, I fly all the way to Perth, Australia to play the Nanup Folk Festival. And then I'm going down to farther in West Australia to a place called The Dam. And then I'm going to Perth to play some shows, and I'm flying to Adelaide, and then I'm doing the Port Fairy Folk Festival in Melbourne, Victoria, right outside in Port Fairy. Then I'm doing the Blue Mountains Music Fest in Katoomba. Then I'm doing Byron Bay Blues Fest, and then the National Folk Fest in Canberra. I'll be there 50 days doing a bunch of club dates. It's my 23rd time down under. Mm. I first went there with Jewel, and I asked the promoter, when was the first year I came to Australia? And he goes, oh, I reckon it was about 1999. So I made a record called 1999 that I recorded there, and it's spelled N-O-I-N-E-E-N-N-O-I-N-O-I-N. I'm not even kidding you. Look it up, 1999. And so I have a love affair with Australia, and Paul Kelly to boot is one of my favorite songwriters.
Yeah, you were just about the time you were here last time around, we just talked to Imogen Clark, and you wrote some tunes with her as well.
Squinters.
Squinters, a good tune.
Thank you. Yeah. I love Imogen Clark.
And then you're coming back, you're going to be at the High Sierra Festival in, it's in a new place in California. Is it Grass Valley?
Yeah. High Sierra Music Festival, 4th of July weekend. This is their first time in Grass Valley after being in Quincy, California for years. Grass Valley is going to be beautiful. There's lots of hotels, and I played High Sierra Music Festival so many times, and every year I just have a blast. So I'm playing there, and it's going to be just amazing.
Well, yeah, I'm actually considering going for that.
Oh,
we'll have to
do.
See if I can make it. You can get more information about Steve Pult at his website, pults.com. Follow him on social media for some great stories from the road. Good luck in Australia. Have a blast down there. Sounds like you're going to have a good time. And thanks for coming in.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Yeah. After Australia, I'm going across Canada. You should just come with me, all of you.
Sounds cool. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
This was a blast.
JPR Live Sessions are engineered by John Griffin with help today from Brett Levick, made possible with underwriting support from the Talent Club, offering live music and cold beverages in a casual atmosphere in Talent, Oregon. Find their live music schedule at talentclublive.com. I'm Dave Jackson. Thanks for listening to JPR Live Sessions.